Come, Holy Spirit. Please be seated. The gospel this week is about a dinner party with all the companionship that eating together offers. There are four people who are named in this gospel, and they are about to eat together. There will be some unanticipated moments of generosity and connection that no one at the table could imagine. It will be a moment of intense love that Mary shows for Jesus, but we are not there yet. Jesus has arrived in Bethany, and we know from other gospels that Bethany is a special place for him. He goes there when he needs a place to stay for the night. He sends his disciples to Bethany to get a donkey for his ride to Jerusalem. He ascends from Bethany after his resurrection. So Bethany has a special meaning here. Jesus knows the town well. His friends live there, and he will stop there to eat with them, and it's possible that there are other disciples at the table, although they are not named. It's a special evening, this gathering, and one to enjoy before the coming events. Jesus has stopped there on his way to Jerusalem. Maybe in the morning he will walk 2 miles more to arrive in Jerusalem. It's 6 days before Passover, and we are nearing the end of the ministry and the miracles of Jesus that we have heard in the Gospel of John. We will celebrate Palm Sunday in Jerusalem with Jesus and the crowds next week. But for now, we are in the home of Lazarus, who lives with his sisters, Mary of Bethany, and her sister, Martha. They're well known in the town, and it's odd because not one of them is married or has children. They're low on the social scale, and this too is important. These are Jesus' friends, his close friends. At an earlier moment, Jesus has raised Lazarus from the dead, and he is here at the table. His sisters have grown closer to Jesus because of this, and Mary especially expresses her devotion to Jesus in a moment that no one could have known. She bends down, and if you look at the back of your leaflet, you will see an etching of this moment. Here it is. She bends down and she pours out the contents of a perfumed oil onto the feet of Jesus. This perfume, nard, that comes from the Himalayas, is all that she has. There she is. Imagine this, at his feet. The perfume fills the house. And even more, in an intense moment, she lets down her hair and wipes her feet with his hair. Now, for a moment, we have to talk about hair, because at the time, and even now in some places, a woman who shows her hair reveals too much of herself in a culture that forbids display. Hair is a marker of sexuality, maybe even promiscuity. And it's possible that this Mary has sold her body for money. Where did she get this perfume? Was it a gift? Or did she save the money that was to be used for things the family needed and used it to buy this perfume? Imagine what this is like. You are at the table. One of your friends begins to dust off a friend's feet, cleans the feet, unwinds her hair, and then wipes the feet. She has touched Jesus. We might think this is inappropriate, as it would have been in first century Palestine. We might look away in embarrassment, but not Jesus. He accepts her. He's willing to let her care for him, to love him in this unexpected and startling display of love. Jesus says to Judas, "Leave her alone." And by implication, he suggests that she knows something about him, about his future, and about his coming death. Leave her alone. We might ask, as Judas does, wait, why isn't this perfume being sold? We could give it to the poor. Wouldn't that be a better use of this expensive thing that she has wasted? Wasted on what? Your feet? The text tells us also that Judas was accustomed to take money from the purse that held donations, so he has another motive that does not include the poor. He was a thief, petty in his greed, but pretending to care about the poor. Judas also gives a sign in this instance of his later defection that he will betray Jesus. And Jesus responds with a remark so swift and so full that we have to think what he means when he says, "Leave her alone." Leave her alone. Mary knows what the future brings for Jesus, that he won't be with them for much longer. And then he says to Judas, "She bought it so that she might keep it for the day of my burial." For my burial. In other words, she has given all that she has for his burial. What follows needs to be carefully considered. "You always," Jesus says, "have the poor with you, but you do not always have me." He was quoting from Deuteronomy, and those listening to him around the table would have known the second part of the verse, which is important. "There will always be poor people in the land. Therefore, I command you to be open-handed toward your fellow Israelites who are poor and needy in your land." Jesus says, because the poor will always be with us, therefore we should even be more generous. What does he mean by this? Because we know that we always have Jesus and his teachings. That is the meaning of the resurrection. And I think it's possible that he means that we need to keep the poor close, to serve them, to keep them near, not to turn away. Jesus shows an unreasonable measure of sympathy for Mary and asks us to do the same for the poor. What we take away is something about friendship and love, the love that we might have for one another, no exceptions. The friendship that we see here is based on love, on empathy and compassion, on accepting to the most embarrassing and unexpected things that people do. And secondly, that Jesus will be with us through his teaching and his presence through all the dark days and nights that come, just as he was for Mary and Martha and their brother Lazarus. The poor are with us, but so is Jesus. Jesus continues towards Jerusalem, and he has left with us a way to live.